And welcome back to Reverb. On today's program, we'll be talking with John Bennett. He's the co-founder and executive director of the Cordoba Institute, a multi-faith organization whose objective is to heal the relationship between the Islamic world and America. He is also putting together an event here at UCI, May 7th, called Why Israel, Why Palestine? And he's got some terrific panelists that'll be coming here to talk about it. And I want to welcome John Bennett to Reverb. John, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on Reverb. And as we talked off air, we're in the middle of our fund drive. So if you don't mind, just as we occasionally shill for the station during the course of our talk, we'll be okay.
I don't mind in the least. Shilling is a big part of America.
It is. John, first of all, I want a little bit of background. You're former mayor of Aspen, Colorado.
That's right.
And sounds like you were mayor for about 8 years. Is that right?
Yeah, 4 2-year terms, which was quite long enough for any normal human being, I think.
Well, terrific. Now, how did you come did you start the Cordoba Institute, or were you asked to join? Tell us a little bit about Cordoba and about your role.
I co-founded the Cordoba Initiative with a gentleman who's become a really wonderful friend in all of this, named Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, who is one of our speakers on Sunday afternoon. Imam Faisal is the head of something called the American Society for Muslim Advancement, or ASMA, and he's also the imam of a mosque in Lower Manhattan in Tribeca, just 12 blocks from Ground Zero. And on September 11, his life, as you might imagine, changed completely, and he and his wife have begun dedicating their lives to trying to build peace between their religion and the West, and particularly America.
And he's author, I just was looking at the website. By the way, if people want to know a little bit more about what you're doing and the activities that you are involved in, they can go to whyisraelwhypalestine.org, and they can find out a little bit more about it. But so he's written some books. I see that he wrote a book called What's Right with Islam. So he's obviously really trying to forge this relationship with the American public.
Yeah, it's not an exaggeration to say about every moment of his waking life is now devoted to this effort. He's kind of on a whirlwind tour of speaking engagements and writing articles and books and interfaith dialogues. He's deeply committed. And let me say, he is a deeply committed Muslim of the highest caliber. I mean, he's completely dedicated to his religion, but he has a radically different vision for his religion and definition of his religion from that of the Al-Qaeda leaders, just to take one obvious example. Imam Faisal roots his vision of Islam directly in the Quran and the Hadith, the sayings of the Prophet, and he is quite eloquent and effective in building the case, his case for Islam as a religion of peace, not a religion of violence.
So it was in your relationship with him that you began to put together this organization.
That's correct. We saw, and we see, this all began a couple of years ago I heard him speak. The way this happened, he spoke at the Aspen Institute. I used to be a vice president there after I was mayor of the town. And spoke at the Aspen Institute. I'd never heard of him before. I was quite taken with his talk. And I looked him up afterwards. I was doing a lot of work in New York at the time, which is where he lives, and began visiting his office, and we became great, I don't want to say debating friends. We weren't exactly debating, but we had long and, I thought, extremely interesting conversations on a wide range of issues, all focused generally on the topic of how do we heal this abyss? How do we bridge this abyss that has grown and that continues to grow between the Islamic world and the West? The profundity of the lack of misunderstanding between the two sides is really sobering and scary. And if we, as a, I mean, we in the most widest possible sense, we humankind don't find a way to address this problem, the world's in for some rough times ahead, because the so-called clash of civilizations, although I question whether, I'm not a big subscriber to the theory of the clash of civilizations, but I certainly admit that it could become real if both sides don't sort of step back from the brink and begin to take a little more time to understand each other.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to throw in my own take on this, and that is, if we ever hope to defeat the most radical elements in the Islamic world, in the Muslim world, I should say, the only way that we're going to do this is by virtue of people like Iman stepping forward and really capturing the hearts and minds of the majority of that world. It's not going to happen by the Western world imposing some sort of ideology or some sort of order. It's only going to happen within the world, the Muslim world itself.
That's absolutely true. We cannot impose our worldview on others. It doesn't work. We can try it, and we have tried it throughout history. And history is replete with examples of that approach failing over and over again, whether it's in Asia, whether it's in South America, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's in Africa. It doesn't work. People have to find their own way towards the values that we think are important. If we think democracy and freedom are important, and I agree with that view, that's fine, but we can't force people to be free. It doesn't work. They have to choose freedom on their own. We have to help them evolve the kinds of values that will lead ultimately to democracy. We have to support them along the way, and most of all, we have to find ways of supporting economic development so that the Arab street, now to focus just on the Middle East, this is true in Africa, Asia, or South America as well, so that the Arab street is, can find jobs. They can find jobs, they can get married, they can raise their families, they can take care of the basic needs of existence. If we were simply able to help them do that, they would find the allure of radical philosophies and violent philosophies a lot less appealing.
We're speaking with John Bennett, and he's the co-founder of the Cordoba Institute. And so I'm going to take this opportunity, speaking of support, to talk about a little bit about KUCI and what we do here. We play the best in new music, and we also have an opportunity to talk with people like John Bennett, Seymour Hersh, John Dean, et cetera, because we can, and we need your support. We need you to give us a call at 949-824-5824 and show us that you like what we do here, that you support us. And as part of that support, we hope that you'll be here on May 7th to hear what these people have to say about the situation in Palestine and Israel.
Mike, may I add to that?
Yes.
That just to reinforce the point you just made, public radio, I mean, I'm a huge crusader for our public radio station here in Aspen where I live. Public radio is an extraordinarily important window on the world for us here, and I'm sure it is for anyone living in Irvine or Orange County. It brings to us an array of not just entertainment, obviously entertainment too, but entertainment and personalities and perspectives on world events and world policy that one will never get in a thousand years from normal commercial radio, normal commercial television. It just brings an extra dimension, both culturally and intellectually, into our lives that's terribly important.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, so I agree with you.
Well, terrific.
And I hope your listeners are respond to your call and are generous.
Oh, well, we appreciate that. It's 949-824-5824. That's 949-UCI-KUCI. Give us a call.
I was just wondering, there's some other folks
yes.
on your program here, too. Why Israel, Why Palestine, which is at UCI's Crystal Cove Auditorium. It's on May 7th, that's Sunday. Yes?
It's a Sunday.
Yeah,
Sunday afternoon, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. at the Crystal Cove Auditorium.
Can you talk a little bit more about who else is going to be there?
Sure. It's a really interesting array of speakers. And I shouldn't just say speakers. They're panelists, and they're going to be very, very open to questions from the audience. So we envision this more as an open conversation than a series of formal speeches. We have six, three Jews and three Arabs. To go alphabetically, Michael Herzog is the first in the list. He's a brigadier general in the Israel Defense Force, or IDF. Fascinating guy. He's been involved in most of Israel's peace talks in the last 15 years, including the Y Peace Accord and the Camp David Summit. Acted as liaison between the Israeli Defense Minister, the Prime Minister, and the intelligence community and the Army. He's been right in the center of strategic thinking in the nation of Israel. A second person, Rabbi Brad Hirschfeld, the Vice President of CLAL, which is the National Jewish Center for Learning and Leadership, probably America's premier Jewish think tank. Sari Naseba, he's President of Al-Quds University, the Arab University of Jerusalem, and the largest Palestinian university, also a professor of philosophy. In 2003, he was the co-organizer of something called the People's Voice, which was a civil effort to build a model peace plan between Israel and Israelis and Palestinians. And his partner in the thing was the former head of Shin Bet on the Israeli side, Ami Ayalon. Anyway, Sari is another utterly fascinating guy, Palestinian, educated at Oxford with a PhD from Harvard. Imam Faisal, I've already mentioned. Robert Satloff is the executive director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, one of the major policy think tanks in Washington, currently focusing on U.S. public diplomacy in the Middle East. And Professor Shibli Talami has the title, he's a Palestinian living in America, Anwar Sadat Professor of Peace and Development at the University of Maryland, and he's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, been a member of various peace efforts, and was a part of the U.S. government's advisory group on public diplomacy for the Arab and Muslim world, and co-authored a major work published by the government, or for the government, called Changing Minds, Winning Peace. It's a very interesting group, and the moderator is as interesting as any of them, Rene Montaigne, who's host of NPR's Morning Edition, the most widely listened to radio news program in America.
Now, is there a charge for this event?
No, it's absolutely free, but we urge people to register early to ensure getting a seat, and you can register at that same website you mentioned earlier, www.whyisraelwhypalestine.org.
No punctuation there.
No question marks.
All one word, no punctuation.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the site. I was sort of following along as you went down the list, and these are some very serious people who have not, these are not a lot of academic maybes and what ifs. These are people who have been on the ground, who've done the hard work of trying to put this a solution together. So it's a terrific panel of people.
That's a good point. They're in the middle of it. They're not off in ivory towers. They are, I mean, some of them are, you know, maybe a university president, but
sure.
But he is anything but an ivory tower dweller. He is also, I mean, they're all also out on the street working with each other, working on the ground to try to get something.
Now, have you found with this panel, has this the first time they've all come together, or is this an ongoing dialogue?
No, this will be the first time.
So that the six of these people have been together. This is really a remarkable lineup, and I strongly, strongly urge anyone who's listening to check this out. You can go to Why Israel, Why Palestine website, whyisraelwhypalestine.org. Check that out. And it's here on campus at UCI. That's from 1 to 6 at the Crystal Cove Conference Auditorium. And the information is on the website. You can find out, and you can enroll. And
I was curious. You're co-founder and executive director of the Cordoba Institute. Can you describe what the Cordoba Institute does and what your projects involve?
Sure. Well, we do a lot of things exactly like this. We put on conferences. We did it. We did one last year on the other coast, on the East Coast, called Searching for Shared Values in a Divided World, which once again grew, you know, brought together a very, very interesting group of Christians, Muslims, and Jews to talk about the world and talk about avoiding a clash of civilizations. We organize large conferences, and we also organize very small meetings. Imam Faisal, my co-conspirator in all of this, he's a really interesting fellow who is able to talk the language of both worlds, both literally and figuratively. I mean, he's an Egyptian-American, so obviously fluent in Arabic, but has a degree in physics from Columbia. He's very westernized, but fully Arab at the same time. And he can translate the sides in more than just translating the words of the language. He can translate the thoughts, emotions, and philosophies that go with it. So he finds himself in lots of meetings with world leaders, one-on-ones and one-on-twos, and, you know, very small meetings, trying to help both sides understand the other. And that is one of the areas that he is really good at. So the Cordoba Initiative works in quite a range of, the scale ranges from one-on-one meetings with a major U.S. senator or a head of state of a Middle East country to, you know, larger public conferences like this one. We try to operate at different levels. We're very small. I don't want to make this sound like we're larger than we are. We're very busy, but we're a very small group of people.
I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with John Bennett, and I think I keep mispronouncing. It's the Cordoba.
Cordoba? Uh-oh.
Cordoba Institute.
You can say it either way.
Yeah, okay. Well, you pronounce it that way, and I certainly respect that pronunciation. Where are we in terms of the situation with the Palestinians and the Israelis right now? Are we at a point where both sides are receptive? I know there's a lot of tension now that Hamas leadership is in place in Palestine. I know that the Israelis, we go back and forth. This is so many ebbs and flows. Where are we right now?
I think that's the best question to be asked, and I honestly don't know anyone who has a convincing answer to that question. I would say that the situation is probably less certain, or more, put it the other way, more fraught with uncertainty than at any time in perhaps some decades. The ascendancy of Hamas has, I think, has been a deeply depressing event for the Israelis, and the frustration in the Palestinian people, which led to the ascendancy of Hamas, kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I think both sides are deeply dismayed with the other, and I don't want to sound too grim and gloomy, but it's not a positive time. And I think at this point, Israel, the leaders of Israel, may be intent on simply going their own way. At this point, they may be saying to themselves, "We have tried, and it's utterly impossible. Let's pretend the Palestinians don't exist, draw our own borders, and go on with life." The Palestinians, on the other hand, are basically, and I don't want to put words in either side's mouths, so anything I say will get me in trouble with one side or the other, but the Palestinians are probably, some of them, saying, "Look, this just proves what we've said all along. You can never trust the Israelis. They're not interested in peace, and there will never be a peace settlement." Yeah. And, you know, it's. I don't agree with either of those, by the way, but that tends to be what one hears. Well,
that's what you're hearing now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to remind our listeners, we're speaking with John Bennett, why Israel, why Palestine? It's an event coming here to UCI, May 7th. Check it out. Go to the website. We need to plug, and the plugging here has to do with our own fund drive here at KUCI. We need to know that you care, you support us in what we're doing here. The number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. We need to know that what we're doing matters and means something. For a $30 donation, we have a list of different premiums, T-shirts, CDs, tickets to go to concerts, etc., etc. So call us. Give us a call, 949-824-5824. I have some I have my opinions about what's going on in Israel, Palestine, and I guess the most important thing that I can say about it is until this problem is solved, because this is such a core issue, whether it's been exploited by people in the Middle East or not to their own end, it is an issue that needs to be resolved. And until it is resolved in a manner that is equitable, as fair as it can be in this situation, we will continue to have some major problems in the Middle East for the Western world, and particularly for the United States.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that it's hard to overestimate the importance of this conflict to the rest of the world. It's huge.
It is.
And frankly, my own belief is that the rest of the world cannot afford to turn its back on the Palestinian-Israeli dispute and just say, oh, these guys will never agree,
yeah,
let's ignore it.
Yeah.
We do so at our own peril, and it would not be wise.
I have to ask a question, because it's something that's never discussed in the mainstream media. And, I mean, you look at the military disparity between these two sides. It's hard, really, to make a case that other than people blowing themselves up in marketplaces, the Palestinians have virtually no resources to in this regard. And I don't know why, but when we talk about the disparity between those two sides, just in terms of taking care of defending their own so-called borders, the Palestinians don't have that ability. And the other thing that is never discussed, and I don't know why, is that Israel is probably the fourth or fifth largest nuclear power in the world in terms of nuclear weapons. So there is a huge disparity here in terms of the military capability of the two sides. Why is it that we never, ever talk about, in terms of disarmament, in terms of, you know, the hair trigger effect that this could have on the world? Just what I'm trying to do is highlight just how volatile the situation potentially can be. But we don't even really have an honest dialogue about the disparity between the two sides, and just in terms of taking care of their own people and their own borders. Is that something you want to comment on? Or
I think, just to speak generally to your premise that we don't take it, we don't give it sufficient importance, again, I utterly agree with that. Whether one looks at the nuclear potential of the Middle East, you know, Israel, everyone believes, has nuclear weapons. Iran, a lot of people believe they're on their way.
Yeah.
Pakistan's already there. You know, sooner or later, well, I don't want to go down that road.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go down the sooner or later road. But let me just say that the stakes are exceedingly high. And now I will use a different sooner or later expression. Sooner or later, we the world, are going to have to find a way to engage ourselves constructively and positively with both sides to find a resolution to this. We cannot afford. I'm a big believer that the world, to repeat myself from earlier, but we cannot afford to simply indulge this conflict and allow it to go on forever.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense, because it is getting worse, not better, and it has the potential, like the Iraq War, unfortunately, to continue to destabilize the entire Middle East, and with the Middle East, the world. The price of oil, and as we hit $75 a barrel, is not unrelated, just to state the obvious, is not unrelated to Middle East politics, and the Israeli-Palestinian dispute is at the heart of Middle East politics. That is one of that is actually well down my list of why it's important for us as Americans,
right,
and world citizens to engage in peacemaking in the Middle East. But if one doesn't buy any of the other arguments, you can certainly buy the pump at the local gas station argument.
Well, it's certainly important, as we described, as you said earlier, to the Arab street, because this situation is the manifestation in their minds of what has happened to the Middle East, in the sense that they perceive it as an American imposition, an imposition of the State of Israel on the Middle East. I'm not arguing, believe me, trust me, I'm not arguing against the State of Israel here, but they look at it as these things wouldn't continue to happen to them and the Palestinians if it weren't for the massive support that the United States gives, to the detriment of the Palestinians. It's not so much that we underwrite the Israelis. It's that we have essentially supported them as they've driven the Palestinians off of their land. And when that is an obvious injustice, it's something that needs to be addressed. And until it is, we will be perceived. Oh my goodness, we will be perceived as the bad guys in this situation. I'm getting a little political on you here in terms of sort of a point of view, but I'm sure that's a huge part of what's going on here.
Well, the Islamic world, and again to generalize, is dangerous.
Yeah.
Many in the Islamic world, one hears repeated over and over the phrase, excuse me, the war against Islam.
Yeah.
And they do, many, feel beleaguered and surrounded, and you can argue that this is paranoia, you can argue that it's absolutely a valid reading of the world, without taking sides,
yeah.
But they certainly perceive it that way.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we're trying to do in this conference, to come back to the point of the conference for a second,
mm-hmm.
is look at not the superficial issues of the litany of complaints that each side has about the other. And usually any discussion of Israel and Palestine immediately devolves into a raging debate over what I will term final settlement issues, return to 67 borders, the right of refugee return to Israel, the recognition of the state of Israel as a Jewish state, a series of seemingly impossible thorny issues that no one ever makes any progress on. And the conversation immediately devolves basically into name-calling and
yeah.
a litany of all the evil things the other
that
side has done.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do in this conference is take a step back from all of that and ask people not to talk about, we can't stop people from talking about those issues. They'll naturally come up from time to time. But the focus of our conversation on Sunday afternoon, we hope, will be the deeper issues, the underlying cultural, psychological, spiritual issues that fuel the debate.
Yeah.
And particularly what we speak of are the cultural narratives. Each side has these unspoken to the rest of the world because they just assume, they're so deep in the psyche that they don't have to talk about them to the rest of the world, or they don't feel that they do, because they're so obvious. Well, they're not actually that obvious to the rest of the world. These cultural narratives exist that are taught by every Israeli mother to every Israeli kid. By the time the kid is 7, 8, 9 years old, the kid is boy or girl has heard these stories so deeply that it's in their bones. The story of the children of Israel and the ties to the land and the Exodus and the, mm-hmm. all the trials of the Jewish people throughout history and throughout all that time, keeping the dream alive of return to Israel. And the stories on the Palestinian side that every Palestinian mother teaches every Palestinian kid by an early age of the history of the Palestinian people and the history of their families and how many generations and centuries they've lived on the land and their ties to the land and the meaning of the land to their lives. These stories are very rich, and they're passed on with great love from generation to generation. And they're virtually, if they're understood at all, it's only at the most superficial level by anyone outside of the culture. And these competing cultural narratives tend to cross in space with no recognition of the other's existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're asking the question, what would happen if we were able to, just for a moment, for one afternoon, set aside all those political policy issues, 67 borders and all of that, and talk about the deep psychological, cultural, spiritual stuff that is cherished, these narratives that are cherished by each side. And if we were able to talk about those in a civil dialogue, in a thoughtful conversation, and maybe begin to find at least small bridges,
mm-hmm.
even if there are no bridges between the dialogues, if we can just listen to each other's dialogues,
mm-hmm.
we will walk out of the room at the end of the day with a far greater understanding of the other side, whether or not we agree with it. Just to raise our understanding of the other side would be a substantial accomplishment in one afternoon.
Well, this sounds like a terrific event, John. I know we've kept you on here a lot longer than I thought we were going to or expected to, but it's been a fascinating conversation. Once again, I'm going to remind all of our listeners, we've been speaking with John Bennett, and this Sunday at the Crystal Cove Auditorium from 1 to 6 p.m., you'll have an opportunity to hear six amazing speakers. and a moderator, Renee Montaigne from NPR, the Morning Edition program. She'll be the moderator. These people are, like I said, I mean, you just have to go to the website called Why Israel, Why Palestine to check it out. Enroll so you can get a good seat there and really hear a dialogue between six very accomplished people who know what they're talking about here on campus on at UCI. John Bennett, thank you so much for being on Reverb.
Mike, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. And Nathan, thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye.